And what was the important takeaway from last time? So there was this notion of tropicalization, which I want to get more used to today. And then there was the fact that somehow this universal families of tropical curves helped determine what the correct log structure was on the moduli space of curves we want to look at. So I want to begin by going through an extended example of this. Actually, no, let me do a different example first. Let me show you an example of one of these monoids that's not in some power. So here's a very simple example. This is first starting at the level of stable maps. I want to think of a P1 just with a single point, maybe infinity, if that's your favorite point. Otherwise, you could take zero. And if neither of those is your favorite point, then you don't belong in a toric geometry-based talk. So we have infinity here. And then let's look at a double cover. And I don't care. I don't care where it's branched over here, but I'm going to insist it be branched here. And that's a tangency condition. Let me call this point P3. It will be a mark point. And we're going to have the insist that this be order 2. P3, because I'm going to add two more points, P1 and P2, in a second. But and this is the kind of log curve that I had originally introduced very early on. This, you can just take the trivial log structure on the base of the curve. So we just have a curve over a field. I see. Let me just add the extra mark points here. So C is this curve with three mark points, and that lives over spec K with the trivial log structure, K star. And then the fact that this is tangent here to order 2 tells us something about N, and the fact that these guys have nothing to do, tell us about UP or UP3, these points have nothing to do with log structure. So I can draw the picture here. We have these three points where the log structure has an N. And in the target space, we have an N only at the point P3. And the map, the log morphism, has to record the fact that it's a point of tangency order 2. So this map is multiplication by 2, because you're just pulling back a function here, which vanishes to order 1, will vanish to order 2 here. Whereas over here, the monoid in the target space is 0, and there's nothing you can do. Right, so UP1 equals UP2 is equal to 0, and UP3 is equal to 2. Okay, so this is not very interesting so far. And the basic monoid, the special one, is supposed to parameterize the tropicalizations of this. Well, the only tropicalization, what's the tropicalization of P1 with a single point? It's just a ray. The tropicalization of a curve with three points is a point with three rays coming out of it, which I'm going to do this. We have the single irreducible component maps to the general stratum, the big open stratum here, which means that the corresponding vertex will map down to here. If you recall, the UPIs are supposed to tell you the tangent vector to the image over the rays. So this ray maps by multiplication by 2, because UP is 2. And these two rays, is UP is 0, are just contracted down there. So that's the map. And it's clear there's no moduli. We can't wiggle anything. Remember, points have to stay inside their cones. So here we have the Q basic is 0. So nothing surprising there. So that's the very first example. But the reason why I've set this up like this, I now want to degenerate these points. Now, one of the crucial things that we prove is that these moduli spaces are proper as long as the target space is proper. And that means if you start to deform this curve, say letting P1 and P2 head over to P3, something has to live. There has to be some log curve that you can get by degenerating, taking P1 and P2 to P3. And first of all, there's standard, this is already a problem in the stable map world, and that's a famous result that there's stable reduction. You can you can always add some stable log map in the limit. Gromov compactness is one way to describe that in the symplectic world. And so let's do it in such a way, so now degenerate P1 P2 to P3. And I want to do it in such a way that the stable map now looks like this. Question?
Well, yeah, I'm... that the Q basic was that's supposed to be the log structure on the. I thought that was sort of the log structure on the moduli space of such
right.
things.
Yeah.
But you're saying it's zero. So
well, for this particular curve. So this is a point in the moduli space, and the stock of M bar at
oh,
that point is zero.
The thing over this is zero.
Yeah.
Oh, in the whole moduli space, it would be an interesting thing. There'll be some more fun cue.
That's right, and I'm about to show you a more fun cue.
Okay.
So I'm going to claim without proof that you can degenerate P1 and P2 in such a way, if you do it at the right velocities, so that the stable map degenerates to a map like this. So you, the curve becomes... actually, you can't do that. Because I have this branch point over there. No, you can.
Sure.
You can, sure. You have to let the branch point degenerate, too, at the same time. So now the question is, what can we say about the possible log structures on this? So now this is a far more complicated curve. And let's suppose we can put a log structure on it. Let's try to understand what the tropical curve would have to be. Say from sort of the analog of Gromov compactness, there is a limit log curve. So I don't need to prove that there's a log structure, but I need to tell you what the possible tropical curve is. So what we know is, again, now we have the dual intersection graph of this curve has five vertices. Two of these vertices are going to map down to this vertex. Those correspond to these two components. Because if a component maps generically into a stratum, the corresponding vertex maps into the cone here, corresponding cone. And so these guys, these three components, are all contracted to this point, and that means that the corresponding vertices, however they're laid out, have to map into the interior. And then I connect them up, and kind of there's not much any ways to connect them up. I also have these marked points, right? I have on each of the vertices, I have a marked point. So this is pointing out in direction UP3. These guys, again, you know, I've just drawn the dual intersection graph of that and arranged it in some way. Of course, you know, I don't know the relative positions of these vertices, but combinatorially, it has to look like this. I mean, this point could be over here.
We don't know yet where those vectors are going, right?
So these guys are contracted. So these still have the same UPs. UP is zero.
That's
right. Because it's discrete information and continuous has to be constant. So this is still UP1. Okay, now there's something I didn't tell you last time about these tropical curves, which is that they actually obey a tropical balancing condition. Now, you know, these tropicalizations, this sigma of x, a priori, only has. So it's a bit difficult to say what the tropical balancing condition is unless you're in the middle of a maximal set. But you can prove that if you're in the middle of a maximal set, in fact, the tropical balancing condition is, well, sorry. For those vertices that are get contracted, the tropical balancing condition, the balancing condition is the tropical balancing condition. So here you have a vector pointing out that way of size 2, and that means you have to balance it with vectors, which actually would be the UQs that I introduced last time, with vectors that are minus 1, so pointing out that way, so their sum is 0. And the same is true here and here. These are all UQs are corresponding to various units. Then let's look at the actual moduli.
UQ is something about the map, right?
UQ has something to do with what was happening with the nodes.
Yeah.
And which I didn't go into much detail
in the map, though.
In the map, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's this balancing happening here, here, and here.
Yeah.
And the only moduli involved are the choices of.
But again, when you talk about the balancing, it really takes place in the image, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What we're we just have these lengths, and the fact that the UQs, I'm taking the UQs to be 1 or minus 1, just gives us the relation that this plus this has to be this plus this. So Q basic dual is equal to the set of all A, B, C, D in n to the 4 such that this condition holds. Okay. People looking puzzled. Does this make any sense?
X here is X this
way. X is P1.
Oh,
yeah, this is X here. This is the target space. This is the map, this is the projection.
Well, we're in this one over here now.
But. Yeah, and right, so here. Yeah.
So where
are the Q? Well, there are a bunch of nodes, so there are really four nodes. Let me give them names, Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. And then this edge corresponds to Q1, this to Q2, to Q4. This to Q3 and this to Q2. So one's essentially, you're actually completely constrained by the balancing condition in this case. So you've set ahead of time that this is supposed to be order of tangency 2. So to get balancing here, the UQs have to be both.
And that 2 manifests itself in the map on the ray. Is multiplication by 2, or?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess we could allow UQs to be 0. But that's not actually going to happen with this degeneration. So if the UQ is 0, that actually means that it's actually placing constraint on the nodes for that. Since it does the UQs can't be 0, which means they have to be 1 here and 1 here to balance it with this 2. 1 plus 1 is 2. And then similarly, they have to be balanced here. So all the UQs have to be 1 or minus 1. So this is an example of interesting monoid. It's not a free, just n to the r. And this would tell you what the, and neither is the dual. In fact, the dual is isomorphic to this. In this particular case, it's self-dual. So this is an example of what kind of thing can happen. Okay, any other questions about this? This might have just confused people more, but this is the kind of hands-on work that...
The V-Eta's coming.
So the V etas, so we are the vertices. So that tells us where the vertices go. under this. So the map is, of course, just the projection down here. And so the V eta will be the location of the image of the point.
Understand how explicitly
like
your definition of Q-basic check
could
you get this?
Right, so the Q-basic check, let's write this out a bit more carefully then. So the P eta duals for these guys are zero because the monoid generically is zero. So this is going to be, well, it's going to be contained in, so zero plus zero, that's for the two edges, these two vertices, and then we'll have three copies of n, plus n, plus n, plus n. So this is the sum of the P eta duals. And then we also have n for each vertex, for each node, of which there are four nodes. And then what is it? So we have all these constraints. So this is actually, you know, it's kind of a bit of a mess if you write it like this. So this is going to be a set of V eta 1 through V eta 5, A, B, C, D. And these are the same A, B, C, D that I was using over here. They're the lengths of the edges, A, B, C, D, with such that, let's see, V, depending on my ordering here, V eta 3, let me write down the ordering. This is eta 1, eta 2, eta 3, eta 4. So V eta 3 minus V eta 1 had better be equal to A. That's this length. That's because I'm taking UQ to be 1. Normally V eta 1 minus U, V eta 2 is UQ times A.
What's that? You wrote down all the equations last time.
That's right, yeah. And I'm just doing this again now. So V eta 5 minus V eta 3 is B. V eta 4 minus V eta 2 is C, and V eta 5 minus V eta 4 is so those were the constraints I wrote down. Now the point is that V eta 1 and V eta 2 are 0. Anyway, this is 0, this is 0, because they lie in 0. So that means knowing A, B, C, and D tells me V eta 3, V eta 5, V eta 4, and V eta 5 again, subject to this constraint that A plus B had better be equal to C plus D to be able to solve these equations for V eta 5 consistently. So that's why it's isomorphic. But it's just much easier to look at the curve and say, aha, the only thing I can do is vary these lengths, and these lengths have a constraint.
I think I'm still confused about something. Does the number 2 make an appearance in Q check basic?
It doesn't.
No.
So the only thing that that's playing a role in is that that tells us, via this balancing condition I didn't really talk about at all, tells us the balancing condition. Tells us what the UQs are. So we can sort of understand what the UQs are and deduce that they all have to be 1. So the UPs did not actually appear in the definition. The UQs did.
If you put UP3 equal to 3 or something,
then I would have had to have done, maybe made this one 1 and this one 2. It would have depended on the precise nature of our degeneration. Generally, you can tell. The UQs also will have something to do with the orders of tangency of branches. So, for example, the fact that this is transversal to this actually would tell you that the UQ4 is 1. But again, it's something I don't want to go into detail. It's easier to think in terms of balancing condition most of the time.
So, in terms of the curve, how do you see that balancing condition?
So I didn't talk about that. I just said that there was a balancing condition.
But you said you can just look at that curve and see this A plus
Yes, just because this length have to be the same. That's all. And you know, another way to think about that is, you can get V to 5 either by starting here and going along there. So in other words, you use this equation and this equation, or you could figure it out using this equation, knowing that V to 1 and V to 2 have to be 0. And you need consistency then. You need to get the same value for V to 5 no matter which set of equations you use. Questions? Sean, it looks like you have a question about to bubble up, but...
Well, I'm just, yeah, now I've forgotten what the V8s are, but... you have one per component, or what?
Yeah, the V8s, those are just the definition of Q-basic dual was, let me just write this down again, this is set of all, so V8s, so tuples V8 EQ in product of the PQP eta duals cross product Q and
tangent vector.
Now the V etas are just the images of the vertices. That's how we're interpreting it.
Oh, just the image of the vertices.
Yeah. Such that V eta 1 minus V eta 2 is equal to EQ UQ for appropriate, so V eta 1 and eta 2 being the branches of. I'll do another example, if everyone's happy with this example. This example is somehow a bit more classical. And this time I can actually completely analyze the moduli space. So let's look at X being P2 with a triangle, with, say, the union of the coordinate axes. And I want to consider maps of genus 0 and degree 1. Okay, so lines. Now, lines are not too interesting, so actually they are in this case, but there's a line. And the very first thing, if I have this general line, I'm kind of just in this transverse case that we've already talked about, all I am forced to add points, marked points here. So I want to think of lines with three marked points. Need to consider curves C with three marked points. And those marked points, remember that they are, you know, tangent to order one, if I may use that term, to each of the three rays. Okay, so what's the tropicalization of this? Again, it's exactly the same picture. The domain is the same. It's just a point with three unbounded edges. But this time, none of the UPs are zero. And in particular, so first of all, it's sigma of X. This is the fan for P2. Now, the tropical curve, well, there's one vertex, and that maps into what we usually call the bulk of X, so the generic stratum.
UP records the tangency? Or?
Yeah, the UP records the tangency. So let's look at one of the marked points, say this one. That's going to map into the, that's going to be unbounded array mapping into the cell over here corresponding to this stratum here, which is, if I do things correctly, is this, and we just get kind of an arrow going off in that direction. And similarly for the other two, we're going to have an arrow going off in this direction and an arrow going off in that direction. So as I vary this curve, I want to remember each of these marked points has an associated stratum where, say, we have to map that point into the given stratum, and it has to be done so it's tangent to order one with that stratum. That's part of the combinatorial data in specifying this map. Okay, so that's the tropicalization of this curve, and, you know, clearly we can move it around and we get the same thing, unless a couple of interesting degenerate cases happen. So, for example, we might map into, we might pass through one of these points. Let's do that. This and our curve is.
So here the basic thing must just be zero. I don't know.
Yeah, so here Q basic is zero. Let me write that down. Okay. So, I mean, let's be a bit careful here. So as this line moves so that it falls in here, the points, two of the points come together. And that means we have to do what's usually called bubbling off in Gorham-Witten theory to get a stable map. We have to add an extra irreducible component, which is going to be contracting down to this point. So it will have the two marked points of both falling to there. Now, this is, you know, one of the beauties of logarithmic geometry, is that now you say, okay, now wait a minute. We were insisting before that each point knew which line it fell into. And that, you know, that means that lines that they aren't supposed to fall into, they're supposed to be tangent to order zero, i.e. disjoint. And now suddenly we have these two points which are both mapping into both lines. And that's the beauty of it, is that the UP remembers. We haven't changed the UP, but now, let's just sort of look at what's going on here. So we have the curve. I'm not sure what the base monoid is yet, so we have some base monoid, but we know that we have these extra copies of n, right? Let's write as q plus n. Q plus n, and q plus n over here. Now, over here, everything is falling in here, which means that the monoid on the target space here is an n squared. So we have this map n squared, which is going to be mapping there and there. And remember, the UP is the just the part mapping to n, so it's the conjugate projection. All right, so we have UP. Let's give these names. Let's say P2 and P3. UP2 and UP3 are both maps from n squared to n. Now, I want this to be compatible with generalizations in the sense that if I go back, you know, if I just perturb this curve a little bit, these points P2 and P3 will move away from this point. There's a generalization map, N to N, depending which stratum we were looking at, and then I want that to still be compatible with the old UPs.
Say that again, I didn't get this
last time. Yeah, okay. So let's look what's happening. Let's look what's happening at UP2. Okay? So UP2 is a map from n squared to n. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I want to say what it means for UP2 to remember that it's tangent to L2. Maybe I should have used let's be consistent here. 1, 2, 3. So I want UP2 to remember it's transversal to L2 and misses L3. Okay. The way to think about this is if you deform that line a bit, so it doesn't go through this point anymore, P2 will then map to L2, L2 proper, not this worst locus. And that means you get a generalization. You have a generalization map from the monoid here, which is n squared, to the monoid on L2, which is n.
Well, there's always that map.
There's always that map.
That map is just part of the log structure.
That's right, yeah. Right, so there's the generalization map. And we knew what UP2 was supposed to be there.
Yeah, I get it.
It was just the identity. So we want this to be commutative. Now, this generalization map is just one of the projections.
Kills the other guy.
So yeah. That means this map is something like 1, 0. And then the other one, UP2, will be 0, 1, because you're generalizing in the other direction. So this is really a key point, is that we can fall into components in crazy ways, but the UPs, this combinatorial data, remembers the order of tangency. Okay, let's see what that means for chop-glossing this curve. That's right. This is the generalization
of the log structure on X.
Yeah, from the point L2 intersect L3 to generic point of L2. Yeah. So the point is that's how we sort of keep track of how the UPs behave when we go to some more special situation. Okay, so let's chop gauze. So again, I have to draw the fan for P2, and then I draw the curve. So again, you can sort of just understand where the vertices have to go by looking at where the components are mapping. You have the component going to the bulk. That's still a vertex here. And then you have a component being contracted into, think of as being this cell. And so I have a vertex here, which I'm going to just, by coincidence, going to draw like that for the moment, though I haven't yet proved it's not here or here or somewhere else. And now let's look at the marked points. So this marked point, of course, behaves exactly as before. That's going to correspond to an arrow going this way. It knows it's transversal to. And then this guy, it has these two marked points, and the arrows have to go either parallel to this ray or parallel to this ray. So it looks like this. And then I prove that it has to go here by mentioning the balancing condition again. This has to be balanced, so it has to be in line. In fact, it's a nice feature that, in these cases when you're dealing with the target space being a toric variety, then you actually do have a global linear structure, and the balancing condition can be proved to hold. Anyway, so we always get traditional balanced tropical curves. So this is what we get here. The only choice we have is the length of this edge, L. So in this case, Q basic.
But you wouldn't know this if we weren't in the toric surface.
We wouldn't know we have balancing here.
You wouldn't know quite where that was.
But you have balancing here, so it has to go horizontally.
That'd be horizontal.
Yeah. Okay. But if you know that this vertex is here, then there's no choice. Okay, let's look at the next possible degeneration. So that's one way that these lines could go bad. Another possibility is that this line just falls in to one of these three lines. Okay, so then one of the marked points has to be there because it's supposed to be transverse to that guy. One of them has to be there. But the third point actually can go pretty much anywhere you want. It just is a point that somehow knows it's transversal to the plane. Okay, so let's now draw. And again, you know, it's not obvious how to construct log curves with these properties, but there has to be a limit, again, by Gromov compactness, by the log version of Gromov compactness. So there is a curve there. Okay, so again, we have this. So now the point is, I only have one component. The tropicalization of this is just our favorite three-pronged thing. But it goes into the stratum of this ray. So it goes somewhere here. And now I have the three marked points, and those marked points again know which guys they're transversal to. So I get this. And now what's the moduli space? It's actually just governed by this distance. Distance can be anything we want. So Q basic is n again. There's still even something worse that can happen, which is, as I said, we're free to move this point, so why not let it degenerate over there? So this is combining the two types of degenerations. So the last case we have to consider looks like this, say, mark point there, and then because two of the points have come together, I have to bubble off, and we get that. And then the tropical picture is, so now this is a vertex, well, let me do this one first. So this is still the same flavor as over there, so there's a vertex here. And that has a marked point, which I think is supposed to go this direction. And then this is supposed to be a vertex somewhere in here. And to deal with balancing, the only possibility is that. So now notice what the moduli is. You have this length, L1, the distance from here to here, and this length. We're completely free to change those at will, and we get Q basic as n squared. Okay, so you see, this is the traditional notion of a tropical line, and so you see the full moduli space of tropical lines coming up, but it comes along with a subdivision, so there are really... six types of this, these curves that move in two-dimensional families, right? Because you choose a line and you choose one of these two points. So it's actually a subdivision of the usual moduli space of tropical lines in P2. What's that moduli space? It's just R2, because the only thing that matters is where you put this point. It's a subdivision of that into six cones. Now, that's actually not particularly surprising, because let's think about what this moduli space really is. Right, we have to choose a line. What's the moduli space of lines in P2? That's P2 dual. Now, something goes wrong when that line coincides with one of these three boundary lines, because then we have to choose an extra point on that line. And the way to think about that is you're taking P2 dual and blowing up three points. The points corresponding to these three lines. The moduli space of such curves is P2 dual blown up at L0, or L1, L2, and L3. Now, if you think of those points as being the zero-dimensional torus orbits of the obvious C star squared action, which they are if you've done, you know, if this is the toric picture, then all you're doing is you're taking the fan for P, well, in this case the fan for P2 dual, and you're subdividing like that. And I mean, it's a toric variety. It's a Del Pesto surface of degree 6, and you can see the 6 cones. So in fact, the log structure is the standard log structure on this toric variety. So that feels fairly natural. Okay, so that was supposed to be half this lecture. So I want to talk about degenerations. So remember, I started this series of lectures by saying, well, you really want to consider situations where you have some interesting non-singular variety, and now you'd like to degenerate that too and try to see what happens. So what is the general setup for this? So let's fix B a curve, non-singular curve, non-singular zero point in B, and maybe underline that, and then give B the divisorial log structure. And now let's consider a log smooth and flat family. So let X to B be log smooth and flat. Okay, so a typical situation would be where you have a normal crossings degeneration. So the general fiber is non-singular, and the special fiber is a union of is a normal crossings divisor. And of course, you use the divisorial log structure of x0 in x to get a log structure on x. Okay, so that's the kind of situation we want to look at. And now we can consider a relative moduli space. I mean, I always looked at moduli space of maps to x, but it's often just as good to consider M of xb of x over b, the moduli space of diagrams. So C to W, X to B, where this is still a stable, log-stable map. So this just really means that all the curves have to map, well, the composition has to be constant, I, the curves map into fibers of X to B. Okay, so in particular, the moduli space fibers over B. Okay, so there are general principles which say that, so this whole moduli space has a virtual fundamental class. Yeah.
The map on WB is there
by B. No, that's just an arbitrary map. It's just that we have to, everything has to live over B. So if you were doing this from the beginning, you'd say you're working the curve space over B, and then I would never have to write B down. So this family in particular, I mean, there's no reason to expect that this to be flat. You know, it could jump. It could be that the special fiber over zero is much bigger than the general fiber. In fact, you could have curves in the special fiber and the general fiber might be empty. But the virtual fundamental class can really be thought of as providing kind of a flat family. So in the sense, there's a deformation invariance. If we're computing a Grove-Witten invariant, the number you compute will not depend on which fiber you use. So this is, let me just describe this as virtually flat. So there's some precise notion where you can say the virtual fundamental class varies continuously in this family. Okay, so we want to understand, so just need to understand the moduli space M of X0, which is the same thing as M of X over B, crossover B with 0. Okay, so this is the basic setup for any attempt to understand this problem. You know, this is what people like Jun Li did almost 15 years ago. You have to define these invariants in the central fiber, which are equal to the invariants in the general fiber, and then you try to understand the invariants in the special fiber. Okay, so the way to do this is we just tropicalize this diagram. So we have sigma of C to sigma of X, sigma of W, sigma of B. Now, sigma of B in this case is particularly simple because B is just a curve with a single point, so this is a ray. Now, in general, you know, W might be, for example, this moduli space, or might be this moduli space. And I want to focus on this map has a lot of information for us. It's a tropicalization of the map we want to take a fiber of. We want to take the fiber over 0. So let me give you a toy version of this. So let's let sigma be a fan, just an ordinary fan, in NR, and then suppose we're given a map, so, and let M and M induce a map, M being the dual, as usual in toric geometry, the dual lattice, define a map from M NR to R, let's call that M, with M of sigma contained in R greater or equal to 0. Or put another way, z to the m is a regular function on the toric variety, i.e. z to the m defines the toric variety of sigma to a1. That's just another way to say z to the m is a regular function. So what is the fiber over 0? Well, this is a standard geometry. You know what the order of vanishing is of a function in each toric divisor. So if we want to give this map a name, let's say phi. So the fiber of phi over 0 can be written as follows, as summation tau mu tau d tau, and here tau runs over rays of sigma, because there's a correspondence between rays in sigma and divisors. D tau is the corresponding divisor. And an important point is what this multiplicity is. That's the order of vanishing of the regular function z to the m on d tau. Mu tau is the pairing of m with n tau, where n tau is a primitive generator. Of tau. Okay, so that's the toy torque version. So one way to think about this, let's draw a picture here. You have some fan, and it's mapping down the ray. And now you're looking at each of these rays here. And if you think of these rays as coming with an integral structure, right, we have n tau. This number here is just what n tau gets mapped to. Right? N tau gets mapped to mu tau in here. It's kind of the degree of expansion of this ray, of the affine structure on this ray. Okay, so why don't we just try to do the same thing? Let's pretend that W was a toric variety, fibering over A1, and try to do the same thing. So here is the theorem. So let's let omega in space here. Omega be the set of rays in sigma of the moduli space. So this is a theorem which should be coming out fairly soon. This is due to Abramovich, Chen, and myself, and Sievert. Then for each tau and omega, there's a moduli space. M tau, I'm not quite going to tell you how we define it at the moment. M tau, such that the fiber, such that the vertical fundamental class of M of x0, which if you recall M of x0, I think unfortunately just erased, oh no, it's up here. M of x0 is the fiber over the origin of map from M of XB to 0 to B. M of X0 decomposes, so I have to do this as a virtual fundamental class, decomposes the sum over all tau in omega of mu tau times the virtual fundamental class of M tau. And here, mu tau is defined exactly as before. It's this degree of expansion. I mean, that's the what the map from the ray down to r greater or equal to 0 is. So mu tau is just the map from the ray to sigma of b. It's just a number, positive integer. Okay, so this is a virtual decomposition into virtual irreducible components. The nice thing about this, I'm not going to, unfortunately, go through an example because I don't have time, but the nice thing about this is that what does a ray mean? Let's look at our tropical interpretation. Ray means a one-parameter family of tropical curves. Now, that one-parameter family lives over this, right? I'm actually just take one in here and take the inverse integer one everywhere. So over here, I kind of have a slice of sigma of x, the slice mapping down to. And here I have, for every ray, I just have a point. So one way to think about this is that these rays correspond to rigid tropical curves in the slice. So this is a decomposition indexed by rigid tropical curves. So if you want to understand this decomposition, you just look for tropical curves that can't be deformed, and that gives you some hint as to what this virtual decomposition is. So that's what we call the degeneration formula. The hard part is going back, if you're given one of these virtual components, m tau, you want to describe it based on this rigid tropical curve by gluing together simpler things. So if you have a rigid tropical curve, you know, something doing something interesting, say, this is as a thing about sigma of x, or the slice of sigma of x, each vertex here you can think of as corresponding to a little, there's a little tropical curve here. And you'd like to say, well, let's take a look at some local pieces of curves that look like that. Unfortunately, it's somewhat difficult to deal with these kind of arrows, and there's a technology we're developing called punctured curves, which can deal with these kind of arrows, but we should be able to define moduli spaces that correspond to each of these pieces. And then you want to know, okay, so you have all these moduli spaces corresponding to the vertices. When can you then glue together, say, one, you know, collection of curves, one curve in here, a curve in here, a curve
right
there.
Now you can't really say what m tau is, or?
Well, I could, but it would be another hour or so to define it. Basically, it's kind of a piece of the moduli space of curves whose tropicalization can be deformed to the rigid one. So if you want, I can tell you more detail privately, but I think it's the end of the hour, so.
These rigid tropical curves, are they emitted from curves, or are they just tropical objects?
So they need not be from curves. That's an important point. So that's another virtual aspect of this, is that there may not actually be a log curve realizing the tropical curve, the rigid one, but rather the rigid curve would be a deformation of one that can be realized. So I'm being very vague here. So the idea is that, you know, each of these is supposed to be correspond to sort of an irreducible component of curve. That may not be an irreducible component. It might be, you know, a union of curves still. But what you do is you try to define moduli spaces for each of these vertices. And then you want to know, so inside, let's say V1, V2, V3, V4. So we have a moduli space, mystery moduli space, for each vertex. We take the product. And morally, there should be some subset in here of curves you can glue. And glue to get the big... Get the end tower. So it's much more complicated than that. In fact, that's where we're still kind of stuck, getting the formalism right. But that's the goal, long-term goal in terms of gluing. As we're putting these, the degeneration gluing together should hopefully allow us to calculate, have a powerful tool for calculation.
There we go.
Okay, so that's it. Yeah, so that's what you should want. I mean, unfortunately, it's very difficult, and we don't really know how to do it yet. But that's kind of the end game of this.
Oh, that's what you mean by
believable. Right. It's a way of, say, taking this and telling you what the actual m tau is. And the